Hello, this is Esperanza Phoenix, and welcome to Unpacking Life's Crazy, a podcast about a lifetime of unfortunate, unusual, and enlightening experiences, and how some of us use humor and hope to survive mental illness. In our podcast, we discuss controversial and adult topics. We are all adults here. There will be swearing. In today's pod, we're getting into the weeds about cannabis. As always, nothing we discuss here today should be considered medical advice. The substances we are discussing today may be illegal in your jurisdiction. Using substances which fall under the federal Schedule 1 drug classification may have legal repercussions. It is my strong personal opinion that naturally growing medicinal herbs should never have been made illegal. To understand why I feel this way, let's get into these weeds. I happen to be very fortunate that I live in California. And in California, medical use of marijuana was legalized back in 1996. So it has been available for certain people with medical conditions for a while. That being said, I didn't start using it medicinally until fairly recently. So, I happen to have a medical condition for which cannabis has made all the difference in the world. And that is fibromyalgia. Now, if you're not familiar with fibromyalgia, and at this point a lot of people are, but let me just tell you a little bit about what it is so you can understand. According to the website for the Mayo Clinic, fibromyalgia is a disorder characterized by widespread musculoskeletal pain accompanied by fatigue, sleep, memory, and mood issues. Researchers believe that fibromyalgia amplifies painful sensations by affecting the way your brain processes pain signals. Symptoms sometimes begin after a physical trauma, emotional trauma as well, surgery, infection, or significant psychological stress. In other cases, symptoms gradually accumulate over time with no single triggering event. Women are more likely to develop fibromyalgia than men. Many people who have fibromyalgia also have tension headaches, temporomandibular joint disorders, better known as TMJ, irritable bowel syndrome, anxiety, and depression. While there is no cure for fibromyalgia, various medications can help control symptoms. Exercise, relaxation, and stress reduction measures may also help. So what are the symptoms? Fibromyalgia, such a joy. So the main symptom is widespread pain. Pain associated with fibromyalgia often is described as constant dull ache that lasts for at least 3 months. To be considered widespread, the pain must occur on both sides of your body and above and below your waist. People with fibromyalgia often awaken tired, even though they report sleeping for long periods of time. That is not my case, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Sleep is often disrupted by pain, and many patients with fibromyalgia have other sleep disorders, such as restless leg syndrome and sleep apnea, or in my case, lifelong insomnia. Another symptom of fibromyalgia is cognitive difficulties. A symptom commonly referred to as fibrofog impairs the ability to focus, pay attention, and concentrate on mental tasks. So it kind of seems that everybody who has fibromyalgia, they may be affected by all of those symptoms that were listed or some of those symptoms that were listed, and there are often other things that they experience. In my case, the TMJ, definitely. So I've got this weird jaw thing. If I decide to wiggle my jaw right now, you're going to get to hear a nice pop. It's just lovely. I don't know if any of you folks watched the TV show Grimm. I'm rewatching it again right now. You know, we're in a pandemic. We got to find stuff to entertain us. Me, I'm watching Grimm. And they had this weird character called the Hexen Beast. And like every time somebody changes into one, they make these like weird cracking noises with their jaws and their mouth. Yeah, I can do that at any given time just because the jaw tension in the TMJ. So that's not a lot of fun. Insomnia. Yeah, insomnia, according to my rheumatologist, and a rheumatologist seems to be the specialist that you get sent to if you have fibromyalgia. So the rheumatologist said it's actually fairly common for those who have fibromyalgia to complain of insomnia as well, which is, it's, oh my God, it's the cruelest of cosmic jokes, because the one thing that will help with the pain and make it less likely that I'm having a bad pain day is if I get a really good night's sleep. And that takes so much effort. And somehow I manage to date or marry people who can fall asleep like anywhere. My Costa Rican ex, as they say, could fall asleep on the blade of a machete, like anywhere in the middle of a conversation. But me personally, yeah, I have to have absolute ideal circumstances. So what do I mean by that? Okay, I'll get to the part where weed comes in a moment, but let's just talk about the measures I take that don't involve weed when it comes to getting to sleep. So I use blue blocker glasses in the evening when it's getting closer to bedtime to just try to get my body into that sleep rhythm. I try to expose myself to sun first thing in the morning because that's another thing. I use a vitamin D supplement because they think that that helps. I also take melatonin within about 30 minutes. I use the quick dissolve melatonin, and it's a low dose in case I have to take it again in the middle of the night because I can't get back to sleep. I have a weighted blanket. I also have, my pillows are very specific. My bed, the memory foam topper and all of that, but that's partly because of the pain as well. So perfect pillow. I have my sleep mask. I have earplugs for when my partner starts snoring. We have blackout curtains in our bedroom. I do the sleep hygiene thing where you aren't supposed to work in bed or do anything in bed except like read quietly right before you sleep. I've tried PM yoga to try to wind down and get ready to sleep. So I've done that too. I also have some high quality noise blocking and noise canceling earbuds. I will use those to play vibrational waves or wave music or do a meditation in order to try to relax. I'll do hot Epsom salt baths in the evening. I also have kind of a weighted lavender eye pillow, which I will put on as I'm trying to get into the sleep mode when I first lay down. So those are the sleep accessories that I use every night. When I say I've had insomnia my whole life, I am not joking. I am not like exaggerating. Oh yeah, sure. All of your life. No, like all my life. And it could in part be because of fear and childhood trauma to start out with. That I was afraid to sleep at some point. I'm not sure. I have no idea if that's what started it. But I can remember when I was 4 years old that every night I would lie awake in bed and listen to my stepfather listen to the late news until the program was over and he went to bed. I would listen to him go to bed every night. I have no idea how much longer after that it would take on average for me to fall asleep, but it would be a while of me being awake and just running thoughts through my head, like my brain just, like my brain doesn't have an off switch. And I've actually told my boyfriend this, I wish I was like Data from Star Trek. You could just like push a button and, power me down for the night. And then when it's time to wake up, just like push a button and wake me up, or like set me on a timer so that I get a full 8 hours sleep. So for me, one of the game changers about figuring out medical marijuana was the sleep aspect. I use cannabis every night to help me get to sleep. And if I don't have it, I do not sleep. Not like, oh, I'll be awake for a while, blah, blah, blah. No, like I would be the perfect night guard, because if I don't have medication and all my sleep props, I am awake. Before I discovered medical marijuana and started using that for my sleep, there was a time when medical professionals did prescribe me a sleep aid, and they prescribed me an anti-depression medication called trazodone. Now, trazodone works for some people and it doesn't for others. My doctor, when he prescribed it, it was right after I got diagnosed with fibromyalgia. And he said, you know, we don't really have a treatment for that, but we can try to help you sleep, because obviously that's part of the problem. If you don't get that restful, restorative sleep, then it just compounds the pain. It compounds the problem. So he prescribed this trazodone. He said it only works for a third of the people who take it. It'll maybe help you sleep. So I started taking the trazodone, and it did help me sleep, and I took it for many years. What I did not realize about it, I mean, I knew it made me groggy. And like if I was awakened in the middle of the night, I would have a lot of trouble focusing. And that's an issue when you're a parent. If your child suddenly needs you in the middle of the night, being not quite all there is a little scary. Luckily, at the time I was taking it, I had my partner, their father, there to pick up the slack if that should happen. But the other thing I discovered years and years later, when I actually started using medical marijuana instead, is that the trazodone was also making me sleepy and not quite clear and focused during the day. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the symptoms of fibromyalgia is brain fog. It's hard enough to grasp thoughts and hold things together without adding residual effects from the sleep medication you took the night before. Very frustrating. So what made me start using marijuana? Well, first, let me go back a little bit. I didn't immediately get into the medicinal use of marijuana, like, at all. I mean, frankly, I didn't start figuring this all out until around the time that California actually made it recreationally legal. So right now in California, marijuana is basically treated like alcohol. So if you're over 21, you can go into a pot emporium, basically, and you can get cannabis. You can get, and there's so many different varieties now. I mean, you can get ointments, you can get drops that go under your tongue, you can get pills. Of course, you can smoke it, you can vape it. You can get all kinds of crazy edibles, whether it's brownies or gummies or lozenges or mints. And the variety is, it's really kind of astounding. You need to really study it. Well, you don't need to. There's been plenty of people that have been using weed willy-nilly for many, many years without exactly paying any attention to the strains or what their effects are or any of that. However, I am not one of those people. As I mentioned in my podcast, I don't know if you've listened to one that I've mentioned this in, but at 16, I left home and I was involved in live theater at the time. So the theater kind of became my family. And, you know, even back then, theater people were no strangers to using pot or Mary Jane, or weed, or pick a euphemism. There's lots of different things that they called it. So there was marijuana around the theater, and there were stoners at my high school, but I was not a regular user. And back at the time, there was a lot of campaigns going on about peer pressure and all of that stuff. And I never saw it, like never. I was in high school band. I was in drama. I had friends of all different kinds of walks of life. I had punker friends and stoner friends. And okay, not all walks of life. I really wasn't a good friend with the hicks. The cowboy rednecks in my town were kind of bigots, and they weren't very nice people. I'm not saying all of them. I'm sure there are some cowboy folks that are perfectly lovely, but a lot of them at my high school weren't too cool to hang out with. So, but as I said, I was friends with people who used cannabis. However, I was not a user at that time. I will remember quite vividly the first time I really tried it. And, wow. It was actually in a little community called Crystal Falls. And I think I must have been still driving at the time. I think I must have been 15 or 16. And I went to a house where there was a bunch of people hanging out, and they decided to pass around a joint. And for whatever reason, I guess, well, specifically, I must not have been driving to and from that location, because I decided, yeah, why not? And if I was driving, there's no way I would have tried it. So they passed the joint around, and each person took a hit. Boy, passing joints around nowadays with the, our culture has changed. This pandemic has totally changed everything. I mean, thinking back to that, it's like, oh my God, it was really dangerous. It wasn't dangerous back then. Maybe slightly, but anyways. So they passed the joint around, and I had never really done that. So I'm like, okay, what do I do? And the guy next to me is like, okay, so just take a puff in and then hold it as long as you can. Okay, fine. What this particular guy failed to realize is that I was in high school band and I played a saxophone. So I really had a lot of lung capacity. And I don't know if that affected it at all, but I took a puff off this joint and then passed it. And it went around to the other four, five, six people in the room. And it came back to me. And when it came back to me, I exhaled. And it hit me hard. So I didn't necessarily have a real positive experience at that time. I felt a little disconnected. The best way to describe what I experienced is a time warp. And I've had this happen a few times with marijuana where it's just like, I don't know, it's like time is frozen or something. It's hard to describe. So after we partook of the cannabis, we all went outside, and for whatever reason, we decided to play tag. And we were all like running around and being goofy, and the place where we were at is up in the mountains and, you know, kind of out in the woods. And at some point, I guess I lost my footing at the edge of this ravine. And it was fall. There were leaves everywhere. And I slipped on the leaves and I slid all the way down to the bottom of this little ravine where I lay on my back, staring up at the trees and the sky and watching the leaves fall. And I could hear the creek off in the distance, and I could hear some birds and critters and stuff. And I remember just laying there and going, wow, it's pretty peaceful here. Wow. Look at the leaves. And I just lay there for a while. Like I said, I was in a time warp. I didn't know how long I'd been down there. And then after a while, I heard my name, like far off. I heard them calling my name. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, hello, yeah. And I have this vivid memory of like these five faces coming on either side of the ravine and like looking down at me as I lay down there. And they're like, dude, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I slipped, but I'm fine. Wasn't injured in any way. I was just like lying down there chilling. And one of the guys is like, dude, you've been gone for like an hour and a half. And that's exactly what I mean by time warp. You have like no sense of time. It's really weird. So that was my very first experience. And now that I understand more about my own anxiety disorder, I understand why it was so appealing to lay at the bottom of that ravine. Because as I mentioned before in my insomnia, my brain has a lot of trouble shutting up. I'm constantly analyzing things and thinking back to a conversation I already had or playing a scenario that might happen. It's very loud in there. And at the bottom of that ravine, it was very calm and very peaceful. So you might wonder, okay, well, if it was calm and peaceful, why didn't you continue using it? Probably because I was conditioned to chaos. And that's kind of how my life existence was. Most of it is sort of operating from one chaotic catastrophe to the next. You know, when's the next shoe going to drop? Was one thing after another after another. So I'm pretty sure that feeling that peaceful for that amount of time, it didn't feel natural to me. Looking back, I kind of wish that I had developed a cannabis habit back then. It might have been helpful. However, back then, of course, you just got whatever the guy grew next door. In my community, a small foothill rural community, even when marijuana was illegal, it wasn't like sketchy. It wasn't sketchy like I've heard it was in the city. You didn't have like some creepy dealer who was armed or whatever. I'm sure the people who grew and sold it did have weapons and stuff, but most of the people that I hung out with, and they got it from a friend who got it from a friend, and they grew it in their backyard. And yeah, it was technically illegal, and you knew if you got busted by the cops, you were going to be screwed. But it wasn't like this big criminal element thing. And perhaps that side culture of marijuana is why California was able to make it legal before a lot of other places. So that was my first experience. Years go by. And let me make a confession here. I bought into the whole, drugs are bad, it's a gateway drug. I bought into all of that. When I was really young, I had made myself a promise that I would not try any drug that could instantly kill me or addict me. Period. Full stop. Wasn't going to do that. And I didn't have a whole lot of curiosity about those things. I very much wanted to protect my body from death or horrible brain damage and that sort of thing. So I knew that cannabis was naturally growing. I knew the risks were fairly low, but I still bought into the gateway drug thing and the addictive thing and all of that stuff. So I was reluctant to try it that first time. And even after I tried it, I was reluctant to become a regular user. I did know some people who were potheads, and they would wake and bake, as they say. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I don't want to be like that, whatever. I had a good friend, still a good friend of mine, Monica, who at the time was a regular weed smoker, and I would constantly lecture her. Yeah, she reminds me all the time of those lectures when I'm like, hey, you want to hit my vape? anyways, so let's fast forward to the way future. This was after I lived in California for a while. I moved to Costa Rica, had a second husband, came back to California. And by then, cannabis had been legal for medicinal use for like 20 years. After coming back to the States, I had completed an online course, and I graduated with a bachelor's of fine arts in digital communication. And because of that, I was able to get hired at our local arts council. And I was just working part-time, but the physical limitations of my fibromyalgia caught up to me real quick. Because, as I've said, one of the few things you can do for it is get enough sleep. Another thing that you do to manage it is stress reduction. And I had just been thrown into an administrative position that had never existed before and was using all of my skills. I was using my skills as a teacher. I was using my skills as a communicator. I was doing advertising for the program, a ton of different things. And oftentimes I was doing more than 30 hours a week because it needed to be done, even though I wasn't officially being paid for it at that point, because I was only allowed a certain number of hours. I was still doing it because I love art and I love kids, and I needed to make the program successful. But it had a big toll on my condition, and the pain was getting worse and worse. And one of the symptoms that's mentioned with fibromyalgia is the brain fog. And I believe the cause of the brain fog is your brain using energy to ignore the pain, because that's what happens. Even now that I have some sort of a pain treatment, I sometimes forget to use it because I spent 20 years with absolutely nothing to help that pain. Absolutely nothing. There wasn't anything they would prescribe. There were no painkillers. There was nothing. So you either think about the pain and you're just fucking miserable. And it's not even just the feeling of the pain too that's holding you back, because you're thinking, oh, well, yeah, somebody invites you to a party. I'd love to go to the party. But then in the back of your mind, like, oh, is it going to be a good day? Is it going to be a bad day? How am I going to sleep the night before? Is that going to be a day where I'm like totally suffering? And then, you know, it's great for my acting skills. I mean, really, fibro has been amazing for my acting skills. You have no idea. I can walk into a room and be like bubbly and happy and life is just wonderful. Hi, everybody. How's it going? And my body is hurting, like hurting. But I don't want to make other people miserable. And there's nothing that can be done about my pain. So you learn to ignore it as best you can. But that takes a great deal of mental energy to just be constantly blocking that off, constantly blocking that off. So here I am in this complicated new position. I'm trying to learn crazy stuff like how to do spreadsheets, because I have to document the money coming in and the grants and the scholarships to the kids and all of that stuff. And as the pain is getting worse, I'm becoming less and less effective at making this position work. So I started doing a lot of research. Basically, what the doctors had, quote, done for me, wasn't much. They tried me on a few of these drugs that you may have seen advertised on TV. Lyrica, it may help, blah, blah, blah. The drugs that they tried me on were psychological medications. And I can only assume that they're just trying to make you feel better about the fact that you're suffering. That seems to be the only real explanation, because none of those drugs that they gave me helped me with the pain. One of them that my doctor had given me helped me sleep. That was great. And at that time, I was still taking that sleep medication. But every time they tried me on one of these other beneficial fibro whatever treatment drugs, the side effects were terrible and it didn't stop the pain. So what was the point? What was the point? So they put me through 4, 5, 6 of those different things. You know, I put on weight. I had digestive issues. One of them made me super anxious and then I couldn't sleep. They had all kinds of problems. You know, and you see that long list of stuff that goes down when they suggest it in the TV ads and possibly death. I don't know. But anyways, it was not going well. So I did a lot of research, and what kept coming up and kept coming up is that people had had a lot of success using medical marijuana, and specifically CBD. So I basically got my green card, my marijuana prescription card, because I couldn't take it anymore. I needed to try something, because if I didn't do something for the constant pain and something that was going to help me sleep better, I was going to have to leave this, quote, dream job. Okay, there were many things about it that were nightmares. But, you know, I was working in the arts industry and I was working with children, and there were many really meaningful things about that position. And frankly, it paid better than any job I'd ever had. I can be perfectly honest. So the nearest doctor that would prescribe medical marijuana was in a town called Modesto, which was about an hour from where I was living at the time. So I made an appointment and I drove down there. And one of the first things they have you do is you sit down and you fill out this whole list. They want to know your symptoms. And then they have a list of possible side effects and things that you might experience while using it so that you're all up to speed. And I'm reading down the list and I honestly laughed out loud when I got to the side effect of euphoria. Yeah, euphoria. Oh my God, what an awesome side effect, right? I was like, here you've got all these horrible things on the medical prescriptions I've been taking. No, they cause blurry vision, they cause loss of memory, may cause diarrhea. It's just like horrible stuff. But euphoria is like, oh no, I might be too happy. That would be tragic. So I was already like, okay, this is pretty cool. And I go into the back and I meet with this funny lady. She was awesome. The doctor I met with was great. I would guess that she was probably in her early 70s. And in the course of our conversation, I found out that she actually used to work for the pharmaceutical companies. And then as she started knowing people who were benefiting from cannabis and all of the benefits, and also learning that basically it shouldn't be a Schedule I in the first place. And I'll tell you about that in a second. But she saw all the harm that the pharmaceuticals were doing, and that cannabis could replace a lot of those drugs that people were being put on that had terrible side effects, or if used in excess, could kill them. And so she decided to become one of those people who certifies people to use medicinal marijuana. And she was quite the character, too. She had, you know, several very colorful bracelets on each arm and rings, and she was a lot of fun. So I sit down and I start talking to her, and she looks over my chart and she says, wow. So how long have you been using medical marijuana? And I'm like, wait, whoa, you missed the part where I said this is my first time. I've never used medical marijuana. And she looks at me and she says, but you have depression, insomnia, and fibromyalgia? And I said, yeah. And she said, oh, honey, your life is about to change. She was so right. Oh my God, it makes me want to cry how right she was. I mean, seriously. So, of course, she approved my prescription thing, and I got my little card and all that stuff. And then they told me where the nearest dispensary was. And it was cool because I'd never been to one of those places. And even then, now it's more so now that it's fully 100% recreationally legal. But back then, the medicinal places, you go in and like the guys are wearing lab coats. It's pretty cute. And you meet with someone and they have this list, and they basically said, okay, so what is it you hope to get out of using marijuana? What are the things, the symptoms you need to alleviate? You know, what can we do to help you? Top of the list, insomnia, and then pain, definitely pain. And so the guy sits down and he educates me. Until that time, I didn't realize that you know, you hear about people, oh, they're just like all doped up and blah, blah, blah. Okay. Cannabis has different strains. So the two types of strains of cannabis are sativa and indica. Now, indica, what's the joke? It puts you in the couch. So indica makes you sleepy. It can be a whole body high. You might feel like a humming, a relaxation. It's great for sleep. It's great for sleep. But if you need to be alert and like getting work done and stuff, indica is not what you want to be using. The other strain is sativa. Sativa strains are uplifting. They are what you call a head high. They tend to give you more energy. So a sativa is a take a toke and clean the garage kind of a thing. Sativa is a very different experience. So if you need to actually still get work done, but kill the pain, then sativa is the strain you need to be using. Now, in addition to just having the sativa strain and the indica strain, there's another part of the cannabis plant which is vital, and that is CBD. Now, CBD is short for cannabidol. Anyways, there are different pronunciations. I'm not too good at it. Let's just call it CBD. So CBD is the second most prevalent of the active ingredients in cannabis, and it's an essential component of medical marijuana. And according to the literature, CBD can be taken from the hemp plant. There are different strains of plants which produce more of one thing than the other, and there are crossbreeds too. So you can get marijuana that's the plant is part sativa and part indica. And then, you know, if a person's goal is to get high, then they're probably not going to want as much CBD because we have receptors in our body. And the receptors in our body are built for these CBDs, and they go right in there, and it can help with things like inflammation and pain and all of that. However, those are the same receptors that also take in the other parts of it. So, for example, let's say you take a big dose of CBD that doesn't have THC. So THC is the active compound that makes you high. And CBD, if it's straight up CBD, it will not make you high at all, but will still help with the inflammation, make you feel relaxed, all that kind of thing. But it doesn't have like a psychotropic effect. It doesn't, you know, make you sleepy necessarily or uplifted or any of that stuff. It's just a different component. So when I initially signed up, I was really concerned about the high part. I did not want to be having a time warp experience while I was trying to deal with lesson plans. That was not going to be okay. Also, I've never been a smoker. I don't like smoking. It's disgusting and it stinks and it causes cancer and all kinds of other health problems. The husband was a smoker, promised dozens of times that he was going to quit, never did, or quit and then stuck around. It's just nasty. So I was really afraid of smoking marijuana at all at that point. And so I explained that, and I explained, you know, I need something for my insomnia, I need something for the pain. And he said, okay, well, what we're going to do is let's try you on an edible, an indica edible, which will help you sleep. And then we'll do the contralingual drops for the pain. So basically, it is a suspension of the cannabis in, it could be an oil or an alcohol. It kind of depends on which brand you use, what kind you use. And you use a dropper and you put it under your tongue so it absorbs fairly quickly. So I got my brownie and I got my drops and I drove the hour home from Modesto and I was ready to do this experiment. I didn't know if it was going to help. I didn't know, you know, what to expect. And they say, okay, cut off just a teeny tiny little piece. Okay, here's the thing with edibles. It takes a while for the edible to digest and for you to feel the effects of the cannabis. So many people make the mistake of, you know, trying the first small little bit that, you know, they say try this and then give it time before you take more. But what happens is a lot of people lose track of time, or they, I'm not feeling it, or this isn't anything, or what, especially with homemade edibles, because people don't realize sometimes just the power or how much of the plant they've put in there. And so it can be quite powerful. However, the nice thing is it's not going to kill you. It is not, no, it's not going to kill you. You may not be real happy for a while. Like, you may feel really queasy and just like, oh God, please make the world stop moving, but you are not going to die. However, to avoid that scenario, yeah, give it 45 minutes to an hour and a half before you up your dose of edibles, because once it's in there, you just have to wait it out. And the reason I use edibles for sleep is because it lasts a long time. If I were to have a puff off a joint and get sleepy, I could fall asleep, but once it wears off in an hour or so, then I'm awake again. Whereas edibles, it takes a while to digest, and it takes a while to get out of your system. So the edibles can help me get to sleep, and then they can help me stay asleep, which is great for when you want to use them for sleep. Not so great if you're trying to have a good time and you have too much of it, because you just have to wait for that to wear off. So let's go back to my first night. I got the medication. I get back home and I've got this brownie, and I take a little corner of it and I take it, and I'm just like, you know, chillaxing, watching TV. I let my son know that I had just taken this edible. So if I got weird or something, he wouldn't be like tripping out, like, what is wrong with my mama? But also, just so he was aware and could tell me later, did I act weird? I mean, did you sense that I was weird? Because I don't want to be weird. I just, you know, I just want to medicate and hopefully help my situation. So I took my little corner brownie and I'm watching TV. And after a while, I was like, wow, nothing hurts. Nothing hurts. Like, my whole body. I mean, I can cry just thinking about it. Nothing hurt. Like, for the first time I could remember in, like, forever. Like, literally, like, I had no memory of the last time I had been without pain somewhere in my body. And at that moment, nothing hurt. Nothing. And I was like, oh my God. I mean, it makes me want to cry again now. I mean, I was literally sitting on my couch, tears streaming down my face with relief, just relief that I was not in pain. And then I had tears of rage, like rage, because I'd been suffering from fibromyalgia pain to one degree or another, and getting worse since I was in my 20s. I was in my 40s when I discovered medical marijuana. And I don't even know how many doctors I had gone to in those two decades who knew that I had fibromyalgia and only prescribed me those horrible psychiatric medications that did not do shit. And not one of those doctors told me, you know, medical marijuana could relieve your symptoms and help you sleep. Why? Because it's a Schedule I drug with the federal government. And so it put their practice at risk to tell me the truth. So I suffered until I finally figured it out on my own. I finally did the research. And then I discovered just how big the lie about cannabis was. Lie number one, it's addictive. Cannabis is not physically addictive. Physically addictive, meaning you have some sort of physical symptom if you stop smoking it, and you have a physical need and that craving and all of that stuff that comes with addiction. It might be mentally addictive. You might get used to using it to relax, but it's not going to be like alcohol. which, by the way, is the real gateway drug that people get withdrawals with alcohol. Like, people get addicted to alcohol and like, oh, like I have to have it. And if they don't have it, they get the shakes and it affects them like that. That isn't a thing with cannabis. All right. Line number two, it's a gateway drug. All right. Anecdotally, I know literally dozens of people who smoke pot and have never touched any other drug. Well, alcohol and coffee and chocolate, which are technically drugs. But, you know, they have never had any desire to use anything more serious or addictive or dangerous than marijuana. Marijuana actually helps people get off drugs because, as I said, it treats pain. It does such a good job treating pain. So there are people who are being prescribed these really, really dangerous opioids, and instead they could be using cannabis, treating their pain, and not risk dying. And that is the biggest thing. People don't overdose on cannabis. You don't. Because let's say you're smoking it. You would get to the point where you couldn't find your lighter to light another joint and curl up on the couch and go to sleep. That might happen. But you can't possibly smoke enough of it to like shut down your brain or stop your heart or do any of those things. It's not like that. And God, why would you want to? I mean, if you get high, to the point where you're kind of like dizzy and woozy and whatever, what would be the point of taking more? So let me read you the definition of a Schedule One drug. And knowing what you know about cannabis already from the media, from what I'm saying here, whatever, tell me if you think it should be a Schedule One drug. So, Schedule One drugs, substances, or chemicals are defined as drugs with no currently acceptable medical use and a high potential for abuse. Some examples of Schedule One drugs are heroin, LSD, cannabis, and methamphetamine or ecstasy, methadone, and peyote. The only one of the things I listed there that is similar to cannabis in any way is peyote. And frankly, I haven't done my research on peyote. It may be similar in its properties to marijuana and also not be dangerous and still be in the Schedule One category. You know what else is on that list of Schedule One drugs? Magic mushrooms. Shrooms are also on that list. So the top problem with that definition is no acceptable medical use. The states who have legalized marijuana, both for medicinal use and some for recreational, have proven that there is a very real medicinal use for cannabis. And that's just for the pain and the insomnia. You know, after I had that brownie and my pain went away, I had another dose of the brownie and I got sleepy and I went to sleep. And I had a lovely night. It was great. It was amazing. And I used those drops to get me through my job. So medical marijuana changed my life and it made me able to go to work. It wasn't something preventing me from being motivated or any of that stuff. I didn't want to sit around and get high. That was never, ever what it was about. Without medical marijuana at that point in my life, I would have had to quit that job. As it turned out, lack of funding made my job go away, and that kind of sucked, but, you know, those things happen. I have some awesome friends in Calaveras County who are cannabis cultivators, perfectly legal. They've got their papers and all that good stuff. And when I was first figuring all this out, that's the one problem. When you buy cannabis at a dispensary, it can be very expensive. And at one point, after my job was dissolved, I relied on my friends who were growers because when they trim the bud and do the fancy stuff, they have a lot of what's called trim left, little bits and pieces, stems and things like that, which are not high quality for selling and smoking. But they can be used to make wheat butter. So wheat butter is basically you take all of those things and you steep them in, I use coconut oil, not actual butter, but you steep it in there for quite some time, and the oils and things from the cannabis get absorbed into the oil. You strain it out, and then you can use that oil for baking. And that's what I did for quite a while. And I would bake my own, basically, night-night treats that would help me get to sleep. And I have another dear friend who, I guess, he used to sell edibles at Grateful Dead concerts. And he says he used to be known as the Goo Ball King. So if you've heard of the Goo Ball King, I know him. He's still around. Anyways, because he was such a whiz at edibles, he had these great tricks for how to make the butter so that the edibles, they really don't taste like weed at all. So if you're interested in that trick, you can check out my website, esperanzaphoenix.com. I will put the tip there. I have a little recipe for how you can make your weed butter so that you can't taste the weed if that's your thing. Beyond helping people like me, cannabis has made an enormous, amazing improvement in the lives of those who suffer from seizure disorders. And for the seizure disorder people, it is almost specifically, it's uniquely the CBD aspect of cannabis, which is particularly beneficial. You may have heard a while back, I think it was CNN, Sanjay Gupta did this whole thing about medical cannabis. And they talked about this girl named Charlotte. And Charlotte had a horrible, horrible seizure disorder. And the doctors were treating her with all kinds of medication that basically made her like a zombie, didn't stop her seizures. She was still having dozens of seizures a day. And those seizures cause brain damage. Over time, they cause brain damage, and it's no way to live. So her parents, desperate, I believe they had to move her to Colorado where they could actually get the treatment because, as you know, it's a Schedule I drug and it's illegal in many, many states, although some are coming around at least about the CBD aspect of it, which is great. There was a grower in Colorado who was so moved by this child that they named their particular CBD strain Charlotte's Web. Now, I'm getting emotional. You'll learn I wear my heart on my sleeve. So you'll hear me get choked up in these podcasts. It's just going to happen. But Charlotte was able to find treatment for her seizures thanks to this particular strain of cannabis that they call Charlotte's Web. Unfortunately, that little girl, Charlotte Figgy, who they named the strain for, died of COVID-19 on April 8th. Charlotte was only 13. At least, thanks to cannabis, her last several years were seizure-free, and she got to experience more of a normal life. So when you understand that this really is a medicine for some people, and I'm not saying that all people use it as medicine. You know, people like to get high on weed. There's nothing wrong with that. I sometimes just smoke it for giggles, like literally giggles. You get the right strain and you will just like laugh your ass off. And it doesn't even have to be funny. It's just, that's the euphoria thing. I'm not going to complain. And I don't want to hear people put me down for occasionally just enjoying the high. Because if laughter is the best medicine, well, there you go. Certain strains of marijuana are therefore the best medicine. I'm just saying. So that's the weed. And I still use cannabis to treat my pain. I am not weirded out now about smoking it. It doesn't have the same properties as smoking tobacco. And it does have the anti-inflammatory properties as well. So even when you're taking it into your lungs, there's still some anti-inflammatory properties in there. It's not for everyone. I use a specific type of drops now in order to aid me in sleep. mostly because I don't want to eat sweets before bed because I really love baking my own goodies and they're great. But based on, you know, trying not to eat too much sugar before bedtime and that sort of thing, it's just more practical to use the drops. So it was out of desperation that I first started using a Schedule One drug to treat what medicine couldn't. And I tried the legit pharmaceutical doctor prescribed bullshit first. And I tried it for a long time. Clearly it didn't work. Cannabis was and is the solution for me. It is not the solution for everyone. You need to talk to your doctor about it. And clearly if you live in a state where it's illegal, that is going to be very difficult for you. If you live in a state where it is recreational and you have pain issues and sleep issues and things like that, and you feel fairly confident that you can handle it, I would suggest you give it a try to treat those things. It's so much better than my alternative, which was suffering. That was my only other option. So cannabis took me down the rabbit hole. And here I am today to tell you, it is not the only Scheduled One drug that I am now using to help fix my medical and mental conditions. And the next drug that we are going to talk about is magic mushrooms. Not going to cover that in this podcast, but the whole next podcast will be all about it. We will get into the weeds about shrooms. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to me today and learn about my journey. The next podcast, we're going to talk about not only shrooms, but the reason I tried them, which is depression, anxiety, and complex post-traumatic stress disorder. What's complex about it? Listen to the pod and find out. That's going to end the pod for today. Thank you so much for joining us for Unpacking Life's Crazy. Please like and subscribe to be notified when a new pod drops. And as always, if you're interested in learning more about this podcast, please visit my website, esperanzaphoenix.com. Last but not least, I would like to offer a special thanks to Chelsea Wild, the talented musician who composed the theme music for this pod. To find more of her wonderful original music, you can look her up on Instagram at minor.birds or visit minorbirds.info. That's minorbirds.info. Thank you so much for listening to the pod today. We hope you'll listen next time. Have an amazing day.